Jacob wrestles with God. And leading up to this, Jacob has had another theophany, but we were not provided any details about this appearance other than it was a very large gathering of angels, so large that verse 2 in this chapter alludes to it being like God's army. And that is not a very welcomed sight in the life of an individual. Oftentimes when an angel appears, it is terrifying, it is frightening, and it is so much more so when there is an army of angels that have appeared. And so this is in many ways a frightening experience for Jacob, and we are told nothing about this experience other than it was like God's army. And so following this appearance, Jacob sends messengers ahead to meet Esau, the brother who 20 years earlier was threatening to kill Jacob because he had stolen the birthright blessing from him. And so Jacob has sent these messengers as a way to pave the way for their eventual reunion. Jacob is on the precipice of returning to his homeland to see his father again after this 20-year absence. And so after the return of the messengers, they communicate to him that Esau is on the way and he has 400 men with him, news that Jacob was not prepared to hear, and this frightens him to his very core, and he is fearful that Esau is going to attack him and potentially kill the entirety of his family. So he decides to divide the entirety of his entourage into two camps, thinking that if perhaps Esau does attack, that one camp might be able to escape. We then see in verses 9 through 12 the first recorded prayer of Jacob, which happens to be the only extended prayer in all of Genesis, which I find to be quite amazing. And in this prayer, Jacob calls upon God. He acknowledges the loving kindness and the faithfulness of God. He also confesses his unworthiness of all that God has done for him. He asks for God's deliverance from his brother Esau, and he makes that request based upon his faith in the promises that God has made to him 20 years earlier at the first theophany at Bethel, when God reiterated the covenant promises originally made to Abraham, then repeated to his father Isaac, and then lastly to Jacob. So Jacob then sends this massive number of animals, this gift to his brother Esau, 550 animals in all, which will arrive in several waves with large spaces between them, hoping that this will alleviate Esau's anger against him. And our passage ended last week in verse 21, telling us that Jacob spent the night in the camp after sending all of the gifts ahead. And we continue now in verses 22, reading all the way to the end of the chapter in verse 32. So read along with me, if you will. Now he arose that same night and took his two wives and his two maids and his 11 children and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. He took them and sent them across the stream, and he sent across whatever he had. Then Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until daybreak. When he saw that he had not prevailed against him, he touched the socket of his thigh. So the socket of Jacob's thigh was dislocated while he wrestled with him. Then he said, "Let me go, for the dawn is breaking." But he said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." So he said to him, "What is your name?" And he said, "Jacob." He said, "Your name shall no longer be Jacob, but Israel, for you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed." Then Jacob asked him and said, "Please tell me your name." But he said, "Why is it that you ask my name?" And he blessed him there. So Jacob named that place Peniel, for he said, "I have seen God face to face, yet my life has been preserved." Now the sun rose upon him just as he crossed over the Peniel, and he was limping on his thigh. Therefore, to this day, the sons of Israel do not eat the sinew of the hip, which is on the socket of the thigh, because he touched the socket of Jacob's thigh and the sinew of the hip. Again, one of the more familiar passages related to the like of Jacob. And it is filled with a number of questions that cannot reasonably be answered in the passage that we have before us today. So in the increasing outline that we have, number three here, Jacob wrestles with God. So there are many things that are unanswerable in this passage. And so the best that we can do is to provide speculation based upon what the rest of Scripture might say, because Scripture itself does not say what these things mean in this chapter. Scripture does not provide the answers to them. So in this wrestling match with God, the first thing that we notice here, letter A, is the crossing of the river. This is really interesting because it doesn't stand out to us, but what is true here, if you read along in verses 22 and 23, we're going to see this. Now he arose that same night and took his two wives and his two maids and his 11 children and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. He took them and sent them across the stream, and he sent across whatever he had. Now incidentally, it's not significant to the narrative here, but Dinah is omitted in the entirety of this passage. The 11 children, where it happened. She's the 12th child, but she plays no role in the foundation of Israel, so she's not included in the 12 children. She is the 12th, actually Joseph is the 12th, but Dinah is omitted because she plays no role in the foundation of Israel. But after sending all of the animals that were a gift for Esau, Jacob settles in for the night, and then he arises and without any explanation decides to send everything and everyone else across the river. Now, we don't know anything about the Jabbok because we don't live in that region, but it is a fast-flowing river, which is very dangerous to cross by day and even more so at night. So why would Jacob arise in the middle of the night and have his family cross over, which would be a very perilous crossing? Why would he do that? There is no answer for that. But in verse 24, Jacob is left alone, meaning that after he sent all of his family and whomever and whatever was left with him, he then crossed back and is now in the original camp all by himself. Why would he do that? Was this a part of the instruction that the angels gave to him in the theophany? We don't know because we're not told what the angels said to him. Was Jacob just out of his mind and did not know what to do and wasn't thinking clearly? We don't know that either. All we know is that in the middle of the night, Jacob got up and sent his family over this perilous river and then came back. And here he is all alone, which is very important. And Moses, in his storytelling, makes this very clear on several occasions that Jacob is all alone. Letter B, Jacob is attacked. Verse 24, then Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until daybreak. Now, the emphasis here is that Jacob is alone, which always implies danger. From Jacob's point of view, a man attacked him and wrestled with him until daybreak. Who is this man? Where did he come from? How did he get here? And why is he attacking Jacob? We aren't told any of that information. It is left entirely as a mystery, but this is the reality. This man appears out of nowhere. His identity is not known to Jacob, and the reason for the attack is never, ever stated. As we know, this quote-unquote man is a divine being, at the very least an angel, but it is later told to us that it is God. So for reasons that we are not directly told, God confronts Jacob in the middle of the night when he is alone in the camp and chooses to wrestle with him with no explanation, and engages with Jacob in a lengthy battle. Why would God do that? Why would he, quote unquote, attack Jacob in the middle of the night in this way? Why would he choose to wrestle with him? We don't know. We're not told. But God, in his sovereignty, in his infinite wisdom, chooses to engage Jacob in this way at this time in preparation for Jacob's eventual meeting with Esau. And beyond that, we learn from verse 25 that God chooses not to overpower Jacob, nor does he choose to defeat Jacob, but instead he wounds him in a way that would always remind Jacob of this moment. Now just think about this for a minute. God is omnipotent, right? What does that mean? God is all-powerful. God's power is beyond definition. It is beyond description. With the spoken word, God created all that is, and yet God has humiliated himself in such a way that he is wrestling with Jacob and is choosing not to overpower him and chooses to simply dislocate Jacob's hip with a touch. It's an absolute mystery. God could simply go poof and eliminate Jacob into dust, but he doesn't do that. God could take a finger and mash Jacob to the ground and leave him sprawling like an ant, but he doesn't do that either. He simply wrestles with Jacob in this lengthy, hours-long battle in the middle of the night and chooses to injure him by touching him on the hip. Verse 25, when he saw that he had not prevailed against him, he touched the socket of his thigh, or the hip, so the socket of Jacob's thigh was dislocated while he wrestled with him. Now, in case it isn't obvious, the he that had not prevailed is the man that attacked Jacob. In this hours-long wrestling match, Jacob stood his ground against this attacker and has wrestled him to a draw. No man was winning, no man was losing. It was just a tussle. Rolling around in the dirt, no man had the advantage, no man was getting pinned. It was just going on and on and on. And yet, God chooses to simply touch him on the hip and dislocates his hip. Now, the pain of a dislocated joint is extreme, and it is excruciating, and the pain is so severe that it is instantly immobilizing. I don't know if you've ever had a body part that has been dislocated. I dislocated my pinky finger when I was in seventh grade, and I thought I was going to die. I cannot imagine what it's like to have your hip dislocated, but this is what is taking place in this wrestling match in the middle of the night. And despite the pain that Jacob is feeling, he refuses to let go. Commentators surmise that it is at this point that Jacob is perhaps beginning to understand that he is recognizing that this is no ordinary man that he is wrestling with. They point out that rather than wrestling with this man, he is now clinging to this man. It's a very subtle, a very unspecified change that has taken place in this hours-long battle. No longer wrestling. In the moment of this excruciating pain, Jacob is now clinging to the man that he is wrestling with. Letter C, Jacob's name is changed. Verse 26, then he said, let me go, for the dawn is breaking. But he said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. So the attacker requests that Jacob let him go, but Jacob refuses to do so without first receiving a blessing. Now, in the English, this sounds as if Jacob is still engaging in a battle with the man. But commentators say that's not necessarily what is taking place, and there's some scriptural insight that we're going to look at in just a second. But Jacob likely knows that this attacker is no ordinary man for two reasons. One, no one can simply touch a hip and dislocate it. It indicates that this opponent has supernatural power. Now, the phraseology in the Hebrew indicates that this is a touch. It is not phrased in such a way that it is a forceful strike that brought about a dislocation. The other instances in Scripture where the word touch is used, the implication is that you will not touch an individual. So the phraseology in Hebrew, is that he touched the hip and dislocated it. Now, I don't know if you've been in a wrestling match, but you can tell the difference between someone touching you and someone striking you. So Jacob would have sensed that. Number two, the desire of the opponent here is to hide his identity with the rapidly approaching sunrise, which indicates something else about this man. He wants Jacob to not see him, which would be somewhat unusual. So commentators surmise that Jacob is now beginning to piece together something about this engagement that makes this more than just an ordinary man in an ordinary wrestling match. Now, here's where Scripture adds something to it. Hosea adds some commentary to this passage, noting that Jacob's request for a blessing wasn't because he was dominating the match or because he wanted to continue to engage in the match, but he was requesting the blessing through remorseful tears. Here's what Hosea says in chapter 12, verse 4. Yes, he wrestled with the angel and prevailed. He wept and sought his favor. Now, that's not apparent when you read this in Genesis. But this is Hosea's spirit-filled interpretation and commentary on Jacob's wrestling match here that we're looking at in Genesis. Now, clinging to the individual that he is wrestling with, he is weeping and seeking a blessing or the favor of the individual that he is wrestling with. And the implication of that is this: Jacob is at the end of himself. He is choking back tears as he seeks a blessing from the one that he is wrestling with. In ways that we are not told, Jacob is gaining an understanding of the significance of this battle. It is a picture of the entirety of Jacob's life. From the very beginning, all the way back in our study of Genesis, Jacob's life has been characterized as a grasping struggle. Do you remember when he came out of the womb, he grasped the heel of his brother Esau? He wrestled with his brother over the birthright. He wrestled with his father over the blessing. He wrestled with his father-in-law, Laban, and now he wrestles with God. Jacob has always struggled with both man and God. And in this moment, his fight with God for control and his fight with man for dominance has come to its defining moment right here, right now, as his hip has been dislocated and as he now clings to this man seeking a blessing. Yet he has no idea he is in the grip of God's relentless grace. Think about that. From the beginning of Jacob's life, he has been in the grip of God's relentless grace. No more so true than right now when he engages with God in a wrestling match, when God has the capacity to smush Jacob like a bug and he simply dislocates his hip. The divine being speaks in response to the request for a blessing in verse 27 and said to him, "What is your name?" And he said, "Jacob." Now, again, this is lost on us in the English, but in the context of the Bible, to disclose your name is sometimes an act of self-disclosure. Why? Because names always mean something. It is a revelation of your character. It reveals your identity. And in this moment, in this setting, Jacob is giving his name as a confession that he is a fraud, that he is a deceiver, that he is a manipulator. And if you remember all the way back in our earlier study of Genesis, the name Jacob means deceiver, something that he and his family, and most especially Esau, were all very well aware of. Going back to Genesis 27, 36, then he, Esau, said, "Is he not rightly named Jacob? For he has supplanted me these two times. He took away my birthright, and behold, now he has taken away my blessing." And he said, "Have you not reserved a blessing for me?" Jacob deceived his brother. Jacob deceived his father. Jacob deceived his brother, his father-in-law. This is who Jacob is. This is what Jacob does. And in this moment, this is a confession. This is who I am. I am Jacob. Jacob's confession in his name, paired with the request for this blessing, is a sign that transformation is taking place in the heart of Jacob. He knows that something is not right. He is unsatisfied with who he is as a man. And this brings us to the most significant verse in this entire exchange, verse 28. He said, the man that Jacob has been wrestling with, "Your name shall no longer be Jacob, but Israel. For you have striven with God and with man, and have prevailed." The Hebrew literally reads, "It shall no more be said Jacob," indicating that a spiritual metamorphosis has taken place. It shall no more be Jacob. He's no longer the deceiver. He is now the prevailer. The name Israel means God fights. Now, Jacob prevailed in the sense that he has striven with God and has had his name changed and will receive a blessing. He has not conquered God, but in his struggle with God, God has changed him, has changed who he is, signified in the name change, and has blessed him. In that sense, he has prevailed with God, and he has prevailed over men, indicating that he is going to have a victorious reunion with his brother Esau. In this granting of a name change, and in this receiving of a blessing, Jacob has found, perhaps for the very first time, a manifestation of the relentless grace that has been his through God. Through God's grip on his life, Jacob has now come to terms with the grace that God has blessed him with. He has come to terms with his lifelong struggle to overcome both God and man through selfish means with selfish goals. He once chose to struggle through manipulation and deceit, but now he is changed by the very powerful grace of God. grace that chose to just dislocate the hip, grace that chose to change his name, grace that chose to change his character and restore him back to his family. This new name also indicates a favorable reunion with Esau is expected because he has prevailed over man, once through manipulative means, but now through the inside work of God. The work of God on the inside that only comes through the Spirit of God, that no external religious form could ever accomplish. Letter D, Jacob is now blessed. Verse 29, then Jacob asked him and said, please tell me your name. But he said, why is it that you ask my name? And he blessed him there. So as proof that Jacob was humbled in this incident, he politely asks the man that he has been wrestling with, what is your name? The response is, why do you ask? This is very reminiscent of what we would read about in the book of Judges when Manoah has been unknowingly entertaining an angel, and it's recorded for us in Judges 13. Manoah said to the angel of the Lord, what is your name? So that when your words come to pass, we may honor you. But the angel of the Lord said to him, why do you ask my name, seeing it is wonderful? In both cases, the answer on the part of the angel or the divine being suggests that the inquirer has not yet fully grasped who he is. The question is another way of asking, Jacob, do you not yet realize who I am? Jacob has an idea, but he's not yet fully sure. And so this is the question that is being asked now of Jacob. Do you not yet really understand who I am? And then before departing, Jacob is blessed, but we aren't told any detail about the blessing. It is only after the disappearance of the deity that Jacob fully realizes that he has in fact encountered the deity. God has withdrawn to protect Jacob because no one can see God and live. The encounter ends just as mysteriously as it began. Letter E, the naming of Peniel. Verse 30. So Jacob named the place Peniel, for he said, I have seen God face to face, yet my life has been preserved. The name Peniel means face of God, or I have seen God face to face. Jacob identifies his assailant as God, even though he received no answer when seeking the man's identity. So like Moses, he saw a form of God. It was intimate, it was powerful, and it was overwhelming. Yet he did not actually see the face of God. God withdrew in order to save Jacob. Verse 31, now the sun rose upon him just as he crossed over the Penuel, and he was limping on his thigh. So the rising of the sun, the beginning of a new day, signifies the spiritual transformation of Jacob. The limp is the posture of the saint walking not in physical strength, but now in spiritual strength, that which Jacob never before possessed. Verse 32, therefore to this day the sons of Israel do not eat the sinew of the hip, which is on the socket of the thigh, because he touched the socket of Jacob's thigh in the sinew of the hip. Of course, this dietary restriction came much later, as Moses, our author, tells us. So this restriction served as a perpetual reminder that when Jacob became weak in his struggle with God, Israel the victor emerged. That's the principle lesson that was needed to be learned here. And commentators now tell us several important things this passage teaches us about God's presence. First, God's presence may be marked with ambiguity. Jacob wrestled with, quote unquote, a man. Only as the episode develops does Jacob realize that he is wrestling with God. God's presence is ambiguous. We don't always recognize that God is there. Second, God's presence does not mean ease of conflict. In fact, it often brings unexpected difficulties. If you remember, the theophany of the army of angels was in some ways a threatening appearance in ways that we are not told. A singular angel appearing can bring terror, and an army of angels appearing can be a very threatening experience. Both encounters, that first appearance of God's army of angels and this wrestling match with the angel of God or with God himself, seem hostile to Jacob's agenda or to our own agenda and what it is we want to accomplish. He was first confronted by what appeared to be God's army, and here he's attacked and wrestles with God. Third, there is a mystery about God's presence that defies human understanding. Never, ever forget that. There is a mystery about God's presence that defies human understanding. His ways are above our ways. God is infinite. We are finite. Jacob cannot see God nor know his name in order to control the situation. But to be sure, God has revealed himself, but God is also hidden. Fourth, God in humility makes himself available to humanity. Think about that. In humility, God makes himself available to humanity. And Jacob is able to wrestle this quote-unquote man to a draw through the humble, gracious, sovereign choice of God. Jacob wrestles this man to a draw. Jacob's remarkable encounter here reminds us that we too may encounter God in ambiguity, even in apparent hostility, in mystery shrouded in darkness. And in such humility, God restrains himself from dominating our lives. When we stop wrestling with God and start clinging to him as Jacob did, we discover that God has been there for our good, and he's been there to bless us. The limp that Jacob will live with for the rest of his life is the posture of the saint not walking in physical strength, but in spiritual strength, something he never before possessed. God's severe mercy with this lifelong limp allows Jacob a victory, but it is a crippling victory. Paul expressed a similar truth in another oxymoron in 2 Corinthians 12:10, therefore I am well content with weakness, with insults, with distresses, with persecutions, with difficulties, for Christ's sake. Why? For when I am weak, then I am strong. You see, the weaknesses, the insults, the distresses, the persecutions, the difficulties, those can all be God's presence in ambiguity, in hostility, shrouded in darkness, in ambiguity. But God's presence is there to be clung to for our good, seeking to bless us. As a reminder that when we are weak, it is then that we are strong. In the strength of the Lord, Jacob is now ready to meet Esau. And not before was he ready to meet Esau. The question begs itself, in what ways do we wrestle with God in ambiguity, shrouded in darkness, a great mystery, in ways we don't even recognize, because it's difficult, because it's a distress, because it's uncomfortable, because we don't like it, because it's not our plan. And we need to learn to be still, to know that He is God, to stop wrestling with God, and to start clinging to God, because He is there for our good and to bless us. Would you bow with me in prayer, please?